you may know from when he was at the World Bank and other places, who actually was, up until just a couple of days ago, planning to come. He's now stationed at the International Center for Biosaline Agriculture from Dubai. But he has sent his presentation, and luckily we have another expert from the region, from the Middle East, in the person of Daniel Hillel. And Daniel is going to give the Middle East region presentation.
Shoki Barghouti is a big man, and stepping into his shoes leaves much room for trepidation and hesitation. So it is with some humility, true humility, that I will attempt to present the work done by Shoki Barghouti, who incidentally was once my student, but has since become very important, first in the World Bank and now as the coordinator and director and advisor at large for agriculture in the Gulf States, based in Dubai and Abu Dhabi and Bahrain and so on, all the others. So, the essence of what he writes is that the region of the Near East is particularly vulnerable to the impacts of climate change. That is because it is already water scarce, and that the climate models suggest that the region will become hotter and drier, with greater interseasonal and interannual variability, resulting in less water runoff. In addition, there are direct impacts of unsustainable farming practices, such as deforestation and soil degradation, which also contribute to the atmospheric carbon levels and also contribute to the instability and uncertainty of the future. So now, agricultural lands will be subject to, according to this forecast, to loss and to human-induced factors such as urbanization, desertification, deterioration in quality of irrigation water, because irrigation water there is not very readily replenished because of the paucity of rainfall and the projected increasing paucity of rainfall. And so groundwater is being mined and depleted, and water tables in that region are falling progressively. And as a consequence, the areas that are near the coast are experiencing seawater intrusion into the aquifer and permanent loss of water quality. So it is not a very happy prospect that is described by Dr. Shoki Barghouti. In his opinion, the Middle East and North Africa should be considered the most water-scarce region of the world, and as the population continues to grow under this false prosperity created by the abundance or seeming abundance of oil, the situation is likely to grow worse, and that per capita water availability will fall more than 50% by the year 2050. That's roughly less than 40 years hence. And there will be more frequent and more severe droughts. I'm not conveying very good news here, But that is evidently the situation. The whole issue of food security has to be looked upon in terms of the resources available to sustain agriculture and food consumption patterns in the different countries, the deficits of local food demand versus production, and the increasing dependence on external sources. External sources, by the way, may mean the United States of America and the Midwest and its productive capacity and export capacity. So, the prospect of increasing aridity and reduced availability of water resources is something that the authors of this report, Schauke and his collaborators, foresee. The region already depends largely on imports and will continue to depend to an even greater degree progressively in the future, in the coming decades. A few countries are rather the exception to that. He says that Sudan will continue to enjoy a relative abundance of water. Water, incidentally, that it receives mostly from southern Sudan, which is now a separate country and may wish to develop its own water resources, and the Blue Nile, which comes from Ethiopia, and the Ethiopians themselves want to hold back some of that water, so there are potential conflicts there. But Schauke lists, Dr. Barghouti lists the Sudan as a relatively abundant, water-abundant country, so he does for Syria, even though the Syrians are subject to the withholding of water by eastern Anatolia. They receive, Syria is a dry country, but it receives the Euphrates and the Tigris, which originate in eastern Turkey, called Anatolia, and the Turks have built a series of dams there. So there are some problems even in Syria, and certainly there are problems in Egypt resulting from population growth. The statistic here is very interesting. The beginning of the 19th century, the population of Egypt was only about 3 million. Today, the population of Egypt is about 85 million and growing. So the demand, and everywhere in the Middle East, is increasing. Altogether, shall we shift, please, and show the region itself and the intensity of the blue color suggests the availability of water, which is relatively abundant in the Atlas Mountains of Morocco and northern Algeria, but beneath that, south of that, of course, is the Sahara Desert. By the way, the meaning of the word Sahara or Sahara is desert. So when you say the Sahara Desert, what you're saying is the desert desert. And you're right, because it's the largest and driest desert in the world. And then the northern part of Libya, now famous in the news, the very northern strip of Egypt. Egypt receives practically no rainfall, and all of its water comes from the Nile, from the south. And then the western coasts of the Gaza Strip, Israel, Lebanon, and the Ark, called the Fertile Crescent by historians, the Ark leading us toward Iran. Iran is relatively abundant, at least the western part of Iran. And then south of that, Arabia and Yemen in the south, and the Gulf states along the Persian Gulf. The high, very high evapotranspiration rates, searing winds often coming from the desert. increasing irrigation requirements and the dependence on irrigation. Dry land farming is not very productive. And so an increasing proportion of the local food production depends and will continue to depend even to a greater degree on irrigation. And consequently, there are falling water tables, a need for investing very expensively in desalination of water. The seawater and problems of seawater intrusion I've also mentioned. The pressure, there are already rivalries among the countries and international disputes within the region over limited and dwindling water supplies at the same time that the population is continuing to grow. Let's go on to the next illustrations. Climate change, a significant change in the expected pattern of the average weather over time, and that will, the prediction is for increasing dryness. And the mechanisms attributed, changes in the land surface, increasing atmospheric concentrations of aerosols, a lot of dust in the air, which affects crops as well as quality of human life. The projection for average global surface temperatures, that's global, are likely to rise, according to this report, from 0.6 degrees to 4 degrees by the end of this century. Few of us will be around at that time, but our children will, and so that is a source of concern. Let's go on to the next one, ice caps. MENA is Middle East, North Africa. That's the region we're talking about. And you can see that the actual renewable freshwater resources per capita are the smallest among all of the regions. The report we just heard from Australia and New Zealand, in comparison, is an enormously positive report, optimistic report, compared to the paucity of water in the Middle East and North Africa. Next, please. The agricultural sector uses the most of the water that is available, about 85% of it. And you can look and see the variation among the countries of the Middle East. One country that is missing here, that I may talk about if there is time, is a country called Israel. Somehow or other it got left out. All right, next please. The accelerating drought cycle, that's pretty self-evident and consistent with the statements that were made before. So the impacts on agriculture are likely to be serious to severe in the coming decades. Not a terribly optimistic, but perhaps a good realistic assessment by the person whom I'm representing today, Dr. Shauki Barghouti. The most permanent and direct losses will result apparently from the inundation of agricultural land along the coast by sea level rise. It is projected that there will be several meters of sea level rise in the Mediterranean, and this is already occurring along the, very notably, along the Nile Delta. The Delta of the Nile is a very low-lying land and highly productive, and the coast has already receded by hundreds of meters because of the low-lying land and land subsidence resulting from less water coming from the Nile, shrinkage, and in addition to that, the rise of the water in the Mediterranean, the eastern Mediterranean basin, that is inundating and salinizing formerly productive agricultural land. And Chauki Barghouti talks about this. The salinization of soils and water is already a problem and likely to grow increasingly serious. I would have liked to stand here and give you a more optimistic report, but unfortunately, the prospects in the Middle East are not optimistic regarding climate change impacts. So, what are the possible adaptations? Chauki Barghouti talks a lot about improving the efficiency of water and soil use. The efficiency factor is very, very important. Water is being used inefficiently in most of the countries of the Middle East, and the yield per unit of irrigated water applied is very low, not much more than a tenth or two-tenths of the potential yields in high-quality irrigation, such as incidentally practiced in some farms in Israel. So he advocates drastic action to improve the efficiency of farming and particularly of water use, land and water use. Better management. Next, please. These are the prospects in the Middle East, North Africa region, and there's nothing terribly quantitative here, but some indication as to the expected severity of the impacts. This is very difficult to explain. Climate change in agriculture, and much depends on the assumptions made in the locations as to what is the trend and the direction expected in the foreseeable future. Next. Rural households engaged in subsistence agriculture and smallholder farmers are the most vulnerable. State enterprises are less so. Increasing likelihood in these rural households of crop failure and the migration of people off farms and their aggregation in cities. And one example for the site is the city of Cairo, which has grown to be one of the largest cities in the world. It's estimated to have a population of 16 to 17 million people already, and that's mostly people moving off the land, driven by poverty, into the city. So that's another unhappy prospect that is related, perhaps indirectly, but related nonetheless to climate change that has already occurred and is likely to intensify. This is something that I would like for you to read when the paper comes out, but is very difficult to explain now. Dealing with climate change, impacts in affected areas, and Dr. Barghouti did a very interesting and very thoroughgoing analysis of the possibilities. I will not take too much time, except to say that the future of agriculture will have to be adapted to changing scenarios of climate change. And we need a great deal more information. There isn't sufficient reliable information, and that's Cynthia and her team will certainly be called upon to generate more useful information regarding this region as well as other regions. Reducing demand, increasing the efficiency of land and water use, and desalination. Fortunately for that region, it is It has not all countries, but some of the countries have a relative abundance of oil resources, and they are already practicing desalination on a fairly large scale. They'll apparently need to increase the desalination capacity. At the same time, there is some source of worry over the fact that their energy resources are finite and dwindling, likely to play out in the next so many decades. However, there is a source of energy that is insufficiently used in these countries, although it's coming into increasing use in Israel, and that is the abundant sunshine, the use of solar energy by various means, is a tremendous potential as yet unrealized, and that is a source of hope. Energy is the limiting factor. Given sufficient energy at a low price, one can have a great deal of fresh water by desalination. So, the conclusion, and I will read the conclusion verbatim because it is short. Strategies to combat climate change need to be prepared at different levels. That is, from on-farm levels to national and regional levels. This also needs to be supplemented with short and long-term objectives, keeping in mind the resources, projections, and the economic implications to implement. As discussed earlier in the paper, and the paper will be coming out in full, of course, two key areas will definitely be related to water and the crops, the cropping system, to improve the local, regional agricultural production systems. In order to sustain agricultural systems, water will be needed, and with increasing water scarcity projections, more efficient and or less agricultural water consumption, including increased use of marginal water, and I am adding increased and very judicious use of desalinated water, will need to be part of the regional and national strategies. Marginal water will mainly include groundwater in addition to the treated wastewater in some countries. Rain-fed agriculture will be minimized because rainfall is projected to decrease while the temperature, that is the demand imposed by the higher temperature on crops, will increase. So, irrigation technologies need to be improved and adapted, and increasingly governments and perhaps international agencies will need to intervene and to target their subsidies and investment plans. And with that, I rest Schauke's case. And if you have any questions for me, I'll try to answer. Schauke is not here. I will try to speak for him. Thank you. Drip irrigation is increasingly used. It's now the predominant method of irrigation in Israel. And the history of Israel, I hesitate to say it, but it's true. In the course of the last 60 years, water use efficiency in Israel has been multiplied by an average of 7 times. That is 700%. Comparing the yield to the water requirement in irrigation, a 7-fold increase, and still continuing to increase. And that is thanks largely to the very, very careful and judicious application of water through drip and other very highly controlled irrigation methods. Now, in the case of drip, we can also inject fertilizer, nutrients, and some pesticides as necessary, locally necessary. And so we minimize drainage and evaporation and the concentration of salts. So there are pluses. There are also some potential minuses in drip irrigation. If it's mismanaged, it can be bad. So it needs a great deal of expertise. It's not a panacea. It needs to be adjusted to the soils, to the crops, to the seasons, and needs constant tinkering and constant adjustment. It can be automated, but it still needs supervision.
Okay, one more question. Then
one more.
Desalinization technology is sufficient, correct me if I'm wrong, to meet the direct needs of the humans in the region, but will be insufficient to meet irrigation needs? Is that a correct statement?
Unfortunately, I'd have to say that is a correct statement. That's a projection for the foreseeable future. Not a happy prospect, but something that needs to be realized and dealt with. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Good.